Hello, it's Jeff. Just before we get to the show, just a friendly reminder to hit follow or subscribe on your podcast app so it's downloaded and ready to go.
This is the Records and Rockstars Radio Podcast with Jeff Woods.
I don't know about you, but I was wondering when it would happen. And then suddenly, without much warning, it did. And it's something we're not going to get used to anytime soon, losing the great rock stars of our youth. And so here's to Darling Charlie.
So when the Stones asked me to join, they talked in terms of a band, you know, commitment, in other words. So I thought, oh, this will go on a year, and then next year we'll fold up.
I'm born only a stone's throw from this sacred turf, the Wembley Whammer, Mr. Charlie Watts.
Charlie will answer as many of them as he will.
The wonderful illusionist.
Okay, now let's back up for a second to early August 2021. At the age of 80, Charlie Watts could be found with pen and paper, writing a note that read, "For once, my timing has been a little off. I'm working hard to get fully fit, but I have today accepted on the advice of the experts that this will take a while." Charlie continued, "After all the fans' suffering caused by COVID, I really don't want the many Stones fans who have been holding tickets for this tour to be disappointed by another postponement or cancellation." And so Charlie therefore asked his great friend Steve Jordan to stand in for him. Jordan would call the call up to play in Charlie's seat and act as his understudy, an absolute honor and privilege, as he looked forward to rehearsing with Mick and Keith and Ronnie. Steve Jordan added this, "No one will be happier than me to give up my seat on the drum riser as soon as Charlie tells me he's good to go again." And then, well, for nearly 60 years behind the kit for the Rolling Stones, Charlie wasn't just good, he was rock solid. So what you're hearing now is the isolated drum and percussion tracks from Gimme Shelter, recorded and released in the final weeks of 1969. Keith found that to have the drummer with the sensibility of Charlie Watts was one of the best assets the Stones could have had, because he didn't have to worry or even think about the drummer and what he was going to do. Keith would just say it goes like this, hitting some notes and chords on the guitar, and Charlie would do his thing in the right time, all the time. Leaving it to Mick, and in this case, singer Mary Clayton, too, to supply the heat. Rolling Stones in our tribute to the great Charlie Watts, and while other bands were covering more novel and more commercial music in the early days, the Stones stayed true to the blues and R&B mostly. Jimmy Reed, Muddy Waters, Bo Diddley. And then Mick and Keith started writing original songs up late, sitting on the bed in Keith's room, and Charlie was on the other bed, banging a phone book or whatever, influencing the process with his presence. Without him, the Stones would have been a completely different sounding band with a very different feel. And the great drummers of our time get the less is more approach of Charlie Watts. And the greats understand that good solid timing and feel are first and foremost to being a great drummer. As for the drum kit, it's not the size of the kit, but the magic and the swing of the sticks of the person playing it. You couldn't count more than about 7 the number of pieces in Charlie's kits, including drums and cymbals. And that snap crack of Charlie's snare drum, signature Watts.
Yes, it was.
Who would have imagined Charlie would be outlived by the partiers in the Rolling Stones? Not that Charlie didn't have his own period of debauchery, too. I'll come back to that. Now, Charlie's best friend in the band, Keith.
Charlie and I work... I mean, I've been playing with the Cat for 40 years now. I mean, I'm the most blessed man in the world. I mean, the first drummer I ever really worked with was Charlie Watts, and I'm still working with him. And it's a constant source of enjoyment. Sometimes up there, we try and screw each other up. Yeah, I'll cut the beat up a little bit, but he'll trip me back. Boom, this little games. You know, we don't really mean to do that, but sometimes you know you get like mischievous and do that kind of thing. And I mean, Charlie, if I can flip the beat for a moment, he'll catch it back and like lay it back on me. And I'm like, yeah, all right, cool, man. But a lot of it's experience, but at the same time, Charlie Watts, he's one of the greatest drummers in the damn world is ever going to see. And I mean, it's so beautifully spontaneous and firm. He's got the moves, you know. I mean, I've worked, you know, between him and Steve Jordan and Charlie Drayton, Georgie Rosselli, and Joseph Modaliste from the Meters. I mean, I've worked with some of the best drummers. I've been blessed that way. And without a great drummer, it's such hard work to like just keep the thing going, you know. But with a drummer, they give you the freedom to be able to, yeah, do what you want to do. I mean, you don't feel like tied down, you know, and that's really what it is. What do I do without you?
Charlie Watts loved playing with Keith and the band, but he would point out how he wasn't interested in being a pop idol, just sitting there with girls screaming. It wasn't the world he'd come from. It wasn't what he wanted to be. You know how the music you first bought is something that never really leaves you. As for Charlie Watts, who grew up listening to the great American crooners of the records his father had in the house, Sinatra among them, when Charlie started buying records of his own, it was jazz for some reason, he said. When Charlie Watts was 12, he heard a record called Flamingo by Earl Bostick that made him want to become a sax player. But then he heard the song Walking Shoes by Jerry Mulligan with Chico Hamilton on drums, and Charlie decided he actually wanted to become a drummer. The first albums Charlie bought were by jazz legends like Duke Ellington and Charlie Parker. Around the same time, Charlie and his boyhood neighbor David Green, who played bass, joined a jazz band at the age of 16. More bands followed, playing various jazz at weddings and bar mitzvahs. And then still playing jazz music, fast forward 1961, 20-year-old Charlie was doing a gig at which British blues legend Alexis Corner sat in on electric guitar, soon asking Watts to be his drummer. And there was a dingy place called the Ealing Club, a basement below a basement, under the Ealing subway station with water dripping from the ceiling whereby you could be playing in an inch-deep puddle. And hanging out and playing around the same time were Mick and Keith and Brian and Charlie and piano man Ian Stewart, each of whom would become Rolling Stones, playing blues and rhythm and blues music. But the hold that jazz had on Charlie would never let go.
And acoustically, the drums are the loudest thing in a band. When you're young, to play jazz, it's very hard. You have to learn volumes, really. It's one of the hard things is to play with great intensity, very quietly. It's very hard, but it's one of the things you have to do if you want to play the music called jazz.
At the beginning of the Rolling Stones, Charlie began to see that he could use what he knew as a jazz drummer within the framework of rhythm and blues music. He noted how blues greats like Jimmy Reed and rock and roll greats like Chuck Berry had jazz drummers in behind them. And so he learned to drum like those guys. There was nothing formal about his drumming education. He just watched. And from there, it was all feel.
My whole life has been copying. That's how I learned to play. I didn't learn to play by going to, you know, it's one of the faults in my playing. I never learned to play. I learned by watching. I should have gone to school and learned how to do it. I should have gone to a classes and had tuition, but I never did. And I learned by watching the great drummers in London.
Charlie Watts, the first Rolling Stone to officially marry and become a father. Charlie married Shirley Ann Shepherd, a Royal College of Art sculpture student. It was October 1964. When he was playing with Alexis Korner, she came to the very first rehearsal. That was 1961. And while Charlie was mild by comparison, she would be strong-willed and outspoken. The Stones would have a no-girls rule in the studio and rehearsals, but Shirley would nearly always go. And when Mick said everybody out, she didn't move. And she encouraged Mick's then-girlfriend Chrissy Shrimpton to stay put too. Charlie would speak of his wife as an incredible woman, saying the one regret in his life was that he was never home enough. But when Charlie did come off the road, she'd always say he was a nightmare and he should go back out. Common story among touring bands. Charlie and Shirley had just one child. Their daughter, Serafina, arrived in 1968. Charlie loved to drum. But what about drum solos? Here's what Charlie Watts thought about them.
I was always brought up under the theory that the drummer is an accompanist. I mean, I don't like drum solos. I never take them. I admire some people that do them, but I generally don't like them. It's not something I sit and listen to. I prefer drummers in a band, you know, playing with the band.
And when Charlie was otherwise occupied, his attitude was, so long as the songs get finished. And so there's a number of songs Charlie Watts didn't drum on by the Rolling Stones. It's Only Rock and Roll is one. That was Kenny Jones of the Faces, who went on to drum for The Who. Stones producer Jimmy Miller drummed on songs like Happy and Tumbling Dice and You Can't Always Get What You Want and Shine a Light. The cowbell on Honky Tonk Women is also him. But the drums are pure Charlie. The Stones from the early 80s, and you know when Mick sings the bit in Emotional Rescue about being your knight in shining armor, riding across the desert on a fine Arab charger? Charlie's wife Shirley, an eminent member of the Arab Horse Society. She and Charlie would own a 600-acre, award-winning Arabian horse stud farm in rural Devonshire, England. The couple also took in a number of retired greyhounds. And so Charlie loved animals, and he also loved being at home. And partying on the road wasn't really Charlie's thing. That is, until his midlife crisis of the mid-80s. As Watts put it, he became totally another person around 1983 and came out of it in 1986, having in the process nearly lost his wife and everything over his behavior. At the end of a period of doing speed and heroin, he wasn't looking so good, so much so his daughter used to tell him he looked like Dracula. And you know what got Charlie to quit all that? He broke his ankle playing a gig at Ronnie Scott's club in London. That happened, and he just quit cold turkey. And imagine this, Keith telling Charlie he'd gone too far. This is the sort of thing you do when you're 60. And Charlie was in his mid-40s. Darling Charlie Watts, a tribute. That a reference to the film Charlie Is My Darling, directed by Peter Whitehead, produced by Andrew Lou Goldham, the Stones' first manager. It was the very first film documentary on the Stones. Intended as a screen test for the band to see how their musical charisma would translate onto film. It was shot during their second tour of Ireland, September 1965. It premiered the next year, and then it sat collecting dust until 2012. Charlie Is My Darling, a film worth watching. Part of his reputation as a darling had been attributed to his personality and to his style. A style inspired by the jazz greats, but more so by Charlie's dad. He'd take young Charlie along when visiting the tailor. Charlie loved talking about clothes nearly as much as music. Now, the most legendary story about Charlie Watts' tailored suits? As Keith tells it in his book, Mick and I got back to the hotel at 5 in the morning and called up Charlie. Where is my drummer? Said Mick. No answer. Phone clicks. Keith and Mick were still sitting there, drinking. 20 minutes later, there was a knock on the door. It was Charlie. In his suit, perfectly dressed, tie, shaved, the whole thing. Cologne, even. He walked straight past Keith, got a hold of Mick and said, Never call me your drummer again. And then he kind of held him up and gave him a right hook. It was 2018. Charlie Watts was asked about whether or not the Rolling Stones could carry on without any of the four longtime members or their bassist since 1994, Daryl Jones. For example, if Mick or Keith or Ronnie or Charlie didn't want to do it anymore or couldn't, here's what Charlie had to say about that.
Well, I think if Mick or Keith said that, I think we would. If any of the others have said no, I think they could get another drummer. I think they'd get another guitar player, and they would certainly... If Daryl didn't want to do it anymore, we'd have a nightmare time finding another bass player. But no, I think that Mick and Keith would or could carry on. But I think if Mick said I'm retiring, I don't know how we'd do a show without him and without Keith.
Oh no.
That's a wrap on Records and Rockstars, tribute to Charlie Watts.
The Records and Rockstars radio podcast is available every Thursday. Be sure to subscribe for free through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your streaming audio so you never miss an episode. Rate and review to help us spread the word. All this and more at jeffwoodsradio.com.
Another Sound Off Media Company podcast.
Come on a journey like no other, where you will discover many rogues that will lead you to a happier, healthier, and more stress-free life. And the beauty is, you don't need any vacation time for this adventure. The journey will come to you. Join Avery Rich on your very own journey into yoga. Along the way, she will demystify yoga poses and guide you into a yoga posture or short sequence, all in less than 15 minutes. You have nothing to lose but stress. The Journey into Yoga podcast. It's not for people who like yoga. It's for people who don't like yoga. Follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at averyrich.com.
I'm Matt Kundle, host of the Sound Off Podcast, the show about podcast and broadcast.
Since 2016, we've been speaking with amazing people who have populated your ears for decades. Legendary broadcasters, research wizards, talent experts, podcasters, voice talent. Almost 400 stories, all for free. Subscribe or follow the Sound Off Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or at soundoffpodcast.com.